all the sensation of being pressed and prodded and filled to the brim, it's nearly too much. And still I hold out. The sensation is too intense, too exquisite, too enticing, and I can't bear the thought of it ending. So I hide from my release. I don't know how long the two of us stay locked in our strange, taboo lovemaking, only that at some point, Des's white hair brushes against the skin of my shoulder, and his lips are in my ear. Am I not servicing my queen well enough? My siren merely purrs. He shifts against me, and I shamelessly gasp at the exquisite feel of him. Surely you should have come by now, or am I losing my touch? He tweaks his finger, and I let out a choked cry, nearly climaxing then and there. But perhaps you need a little more persuading. Never want this to end. He breathes against my cheek. Come for me, siren. I can feel magic and darkness in those words. They settle into me, and through my haze of pleasure, I register that this is all going to come to a swift end. I manage to squeeze one final order out. Give me everything. He does. Des drives into me as I shatter, his flesh pounding against mine harder and harder and deeper. The pleasure is so extreme, so acute, I can barely hold on to it. It washes over me, blinding, unnatural, addicting. His body was meant for this, screwing and claiming and twisting my will into his own. Just as mine was meant to allure him and seduce him and ultimately bend his desires to fit my own. With a groan, he comes, his hips slamming into mine as he fills me up. Each stroke of Des's hips sends another wave of pleasure through me. We come down slowly, our bodies sweaty and dusty. Des collapses next to me before dragging me onto his chest. He holds me captive in his arms, stroking my flesh softly, his lips trailing over my shoulder. He playfully bites the skin there.
Stay in my arms, cherub. Stay here and never leave.
All right, I say, settling in against him, blissfully uncaring about the chill creeping in with the evening. For a little while, we lay there in silence. Then slowly a laugh bubbles low in my belly. I can't believe I let you stick a finger up my butt, I finally say. I'm such a smooth pillow talker. I sense rather than see him smirk,
says the girl who once got me to come in my pants.
Now it's my turn to smirk. Then my thoughts circle back. I can't believe I liked it.
My saucy little siren? I can. I have the feeling that by the time the sun sets on our lives, you'll be the naughty one to my virginal saintly soul.
I outright guffaw at that. As if. A grin spreads across his face.
You're probably right.
His hand smooths down my spine, making my skin pucker.
I have more tricks in my bag. All you have to do is say the word, or challenge me again. I rather enjoyed pitting my magic against yours.
I can't contain the excited shiver that courses through me. I don't think I'd realized just what being mated to Des means. He rules over sex. Everything that we've done together so far, that's all just the tip of a very large iceberg. And I probably still won't fully understand what being mated to him means until I've seen and savored every last one of his perversions and witnessed every last one of his horrors. Only then will I fully be able to grasp this force of nature I'm mated to. We're quiet for a time.
It's not enough,
Des eventually says, his hand rubbing up and down my arm.
Having you. I always assumed that once you warmed my bed, it would be.
He cups my pussy as he speaks, and I swear to God, I am this close to jumping him all over again.
But I'm a greedy bastard and I want more. Always more.
My fingers glide over his arm. His tattoos seem to leap and dance in the firelight. I lift my head and rest it on his chest.
Tell me a secret, I whisper.
He traces the curve of my cheek.
Secrets are meant for one soul to keep.
I feel myself tense at his words.
My mother used to say that all the time,
he explains.
It's one of those formative lessons of hers I've carried with me since childhood.
My brows furrow. Some of my sex-induced haze is slipping away.
And now the sleeping soldiers say it.
Up until now, I hadn't been able to figure out how exactly they knew it.
Dez's finger traces my lips.
And then I fought my father, who is in league with the Thief of Souls.
His finger drops from my mouth.
You wanted to know a secret? Here's one, Callie. Sometime, long ago, my mother whispered those same words to Gallagher Nix. She, a spy set on escaping him, said them as a taunt. And now he's taunting us both with them. I need to understand the nature of his undeath to understand the rest of this mystery.
Undeath. There should be simply life and then death, but in the land of supernaturals, both earthly and otherworldly, there are a whole range of beings that somehow fall outside this dichotomy.
Perhaps then I can understand how he learned that phrase. And so we wait.
Dez pulls me to him and kisses me deeply, tasting like salt and sex and the night in all its secretive goodness. And then our clothes peel themselves off the ground and slide back onto us. The two of us break apart, and whatever moment we were having, it's over. I sit and gather my legs to my chest, wrapping my arms around them.
Tell me about him, I say softly.
Dez has already told me the short version of Daddy Dearest's life, but there's so much I still don't know. Those silvery eyes are on me in an instant.
He's not worth wasting any more breath on.
We're already wasting breath searching for him, I say. Tell me something about him. Something I don't already know. The bargainer beckons his discarded flask with his fingers, calling it back to him like a wayward soldier. It's not until he's caught the thing and taken a sip from it that he speaks again.
He had hundreds of concubines,
Dez finally says.
Hundreds. Just take a moment to imagine that.
Hundreds? That's like having a wife for every day of the year.
I don't know how many of them he fathered children with, but the number is large. Large enough for the killing to get a name in our histories. It became known as the Royal Purge. The Purge, for short. And when Gallagher died, and I first walked the halls of his former castle, I saw firsthand the women he'd taken in. They had this look about them.
Dez gestures to his eyes.
Soldiers get that look when they've lived through too much. Many of them had it. And yet dozens of those women cried for him when he died.
Dez scoffs to himself.
He killed babies, their babies, and they still cried for him.
I don't say anything. There aren't words for this kind of atrocity.
That's not to say that everyone in his harem loved him. In the years after his death, I started to uncover the details of their lives. In the ledgers, we found evidence that some of his wives died untimely deaths, usually after they openly mourned their dead children or objected to the purge. Someone had also diligently recorded the dozens of suicide notes from Gallagher's various concubines. I later discovered that those who survived their suicide attempts were then brutalized by the king. He took it as a personal slight that they dared to leave him. And of course, there were other escape attempts by other wives, and those too were violently punished. Hell was a kinder place than my father's court. To think my mother dared to escape under these circumstances?
Brave, brave woman. The fire snaps and pops between us.
Dez is still lost in the past.
Did you know that when I executed my father, I was expected to inherit the harem he left behind?
He gives a humorless laugh.
Doesn't that make your skin crawl? To inherit a lover like some sort of heirloom?
It's sickening. But then this entire story has turned my stomach.
I broke with tradition when I sent them all away.
His eyes move to me.
I knew about you even then.
He admits, a soft smile spreading across his face, but then it disappears.
As did my father,
he adds. A chill slides over my skin. In front of me, the iridescent fire dims as the bargainer's shadows close in on it.
To answer your question, Cherub, I never knew much about Galagar Nix, only that he was a mean son of a bitch, that he tyrannically ruled over the Night Kingdom, and he killed my mother in cold blood. And now, somehow he is alive.
Chapter 10.
Still no closer to finding me or Galagar, it appears.
The thief stands on the other side of the fire, peering down at me with his onyx eyes. I sit up so fast a wave of vertigo washes through me.
That was a neat trick you did there, back in Somnia,
he says, circling around the fire as he approaches me. I scoot backwards, but there's nowhere to go out here in the banished lands. I look for Desmond, but other than the thief, I'm utterly alone. He crouches next to me and tilts his head, studying me. There's something detached and reptilian about him.
So you can glamour fairies after all,
he says. I can glamour fairies. I can glamour him. My skin brightens. Get away from me. He continues to stare at me, his eyes inky. Slowly, he begins to smile.
Enticing, but no. I think I'll stay right here.
It doesn't work on him. Dear God.
Shame your wiles don't affect me.
He reads my face.
Don't fret, Enchantress. I am tempted.
Why did you wake them? I ask as my skin dims.
Why did I wake them? That's your most pressing question. Don't you want to know why I kidnapped them in the first place? Or why I put the women in caskets and the men in trees?
Of course I do. He takes a seat next to me, and it takes a great amount of willpower to not recoil at his nearness. The thief sighs.
Because I wanted to.
He leans in.
I put the men in trees because, as the green man, I could. I took the women savagely and caged them like I have been caged.
I can feel the sick heat of his anger and his excitement as he talks.
I hid the men and showcased the women,
he continues,
and oh, how I enjoyed watching all those fairies fear the unknown. It's been so long since any of them felt true fear, but now they do. So,
he says, facing me more fully.
Is that what you wanted to hear?
Yes. No. All these years I've spent hunting criminals, and the worst ones give these kinds of answers. They committed atrocities because they wanted to. Because they could. But even as the thief of souls gives me this glimpse into his mind, he manages to evade the answer that I really wanted to hear. I want to know what his plans are. Not how his sick mind works.
Enough about me,
he says softly.
I know, Enchantress, that if you're scared or excited enough, your baser nature will expose itself.
He reaches out and strokes my cheek with the back of his knuckle. I flinch at his touch, my nostrils flaring. I should be sprinting far away from the thief, but my muscles are locked up. I couldn't move if I tried.
The question is...
His hand slides to my lower jaw and he drags my face to meet his.
Which route do I explore? Your passion or your fear?
His eyes dip to my lips,
God save me, I might as well be back in the Fauna Kingdom's prison, because right now I'm staring at Carnon. It's a different body, but the same eyes. My breath hitches at the reminder, and a few seconds later my skin illuminates as the siren unfurls, stretching out beneath my flesh like a stiff muscle. A fierce fury rises in me, eclipsing my fear. This barbarian thinks to intimidate us, scare us. I grab his wrist and pull it away, leaning into his face. Whatever you think to do to me, I dare you to try. I take my other hand and press it to his chest, tapping a clawed finger against him. But you should know that if given the chance, I will gut you and make a necklace of your innards. Not going to lie, my siren is a real piece of work. But it's times like this that I appreciate her particular brand of crazy. The thief smiles at me, looking like his interest's been piqued.
I do hope you make good on your threat. I'd hate to see all this vehemence go to waste.
He moves in closer, our faces inches apart. His breath fans against my cheek.
Find me, Calypso. I'm eagerly awaiting our reunion. Cherub?
My body startles, roused from sleep by Dez's voice. My eyes sweep over our campsite. Swear the thief was here just a second ago. His presence was so vivid that my mind isn't convinced I dreamed him up. But then I'm distracted by Dez's warm body and his penetrating stare.
Everything all right, Callie?
I swallow, an action his eyes dart to, and nod. I'm fine. That earns me a frown. But rather than pushing the issue, Dez squeezes my hip.
Someone's coming,
he whispers. I begin to get up, looking madly out at the darkness, but he gently presses me back down.
If you could be a peach and pretend to be asleep, that would be wonderful. I want the Fae to come closer.
Pretend to be asleep after the dream I just had? I think not. But I do force myself to relax for Dez's sake, even if I don't close my eyes. Instead, I strain my ears and eyes to hear and see anything beyond the fire. One long minute slips into another. All at once, the bargainer's power rushes out of him, thickening the air like darkness is a physical thing. I sense it close in on its prey like a snare, trapping them in place. The caught fairy shrieks like a wild beast, the guttural sounds punctuated by a string of curses. In an instant, Dez is gone from my side, dissolving into vapor like he was never there. I flip over just in time to see my mate looming over a fairy in the distance. The Fae is uselessly fighting the magic, trapping him in place, his scythe-like weapons striking the magical barrier over and over again. Dez folds his arms, appraising the man and looking as though he finds him wanting. After a moment, the Night King takes the scythe away from the man.
You're going to answer some questions for us,
Dez says,
or you're going to die.
I pull the charred marshmallow from the fire, assessing the blackened crisp. Damn it! This is the fifth one I've burned. I officially suck at this s'mores thing. To be fair, I'm pretty sure Dez's iridescent fire burns hotter than the fires I'm used to. I wait for it to cool before I remove it from my stick and grab another from the s'mores supplies Dez has presented me with when he returned with his captive. Pretty sure this is his attempt to keep me occupied while he interrogates his prisoner. Ashamed to say that it's totally working. Meanwhile, several feet away, Dez is well into his interrogation. So far, he's folded the fairy's weapon into an origami horse, taken away his voice briefly, and removed the last of the items the fairy had on him. A couple stones, a knife, some dried mystery meat, and a necklace made of fey hair, because heaven forbid we meet someone normal here.
Who opened the tomb?
Dez asks the fairy calmly. The man spits at Dez. The spittle never hits my mate. Instead, it stops in midair, then reverses its trajectory, splashing against the fairy's face.
Who opened the tomb?
Dez repeats.
Suck on my prick!
Tempting.
Dez
Dez says, cocking his head.
Is that a genuine offer?
His magic unlaces the man's crudely made breeches. Then it begins tugging the cloth down. The fairy's eyes widen and he begins to yank the material back up, fruitlessly trying to keep his pants on.
What in the bloody firkin god's names?
Cherub,
Dez says, glancing over at me.
I think the man's shy. One moment he wants my attention, the next he's being a coy minx.
I pull my sixth marshmallow from the fire. It's perfectly golden brown. Success! Men give such mixed signals, I say. I admit it. I like to toy with my targets just as much as Dez does. That was always one of my favorite parts of the PI business. Grabbing a bar of Hershey's chocolate and a graham cracker, I pull my marshmallow off its stick. Get into my belly.
They do, don't they?
The bargainer's eyes brighten enough to let me know that he likes my brand of wicked. Turning back to the fairy, he taps on his lips.
No need to be bashful. I'm sure your prick will be everything I've ever dreamed a prick could be.
Now the fairy's bucking, wildly trying to pull his pants up with his legs. He's failing abysmally at it.
You sick shite!
He shouts. I begin to munch on my s'more and oh my god, it's one of the great tragedies of the world that s'mores are only reserved for camping. These little bastards are delicious. Dez's good humor collapses in an instant. His magic quits tugging at the fairy's pants. Now that there's no more magical resistance, the prisoner nearly gives himself a wedgie yanking his pants up. The night darkens.
I'm done being coy as well,
Dez says, his voice like polished steel.
Tell me what happened to the body resting in the cavern beneath that boulder.
He points to the unassuming grave markers in the distance,
or I'll start killing you in increments.
I don't know,
the fairy yowls.
Have you ever died in increments?
Dez asks.
It's slow and, well, I don't need to tell you that it's painful.
I never saw anything, I swear it!
I feel the brush of magic, and then the prisoner's hand is jerked in front of him, his fingers splayed out.
I like to start with the pinky. Begin small, you know,
Dez says. Right now, he's 100% bargainer.
I'll remove it, knuckle by knuckle.
God's damn it, I don't know where the body is!
The fairy's ruined scythe now unfolds, mending itself back together until it looks whole and untouched. It floats through the air, stopping dangerously close to the fairy's hand. The fairy lets out a little whimper as the blade caresses his little finger.
After the pinky, Dez continues, well, there are 9 other fingers to play with. If that doesn't break you, there's teeth and toes. Even those are just a taster. And the pain, it's enough to drive a fairy to do almost anything. You'll feel the centuries of your life draining away with each amputation, and if you hold out long enough, you'll beg me for death. Just when you think it's bound to be over, you'll realize you're still alive and aware, and you'll endure it for hours, days if need be. But it will feel like decades by the end.
A sheen of sweat's developed on the fairy's upper lip.
You'll never get away with this,
he swears. His voice high.
The king's men will come for you both before then.
His eyes dart between us.
The king,
Dez says, looking like a teacher whose pupil finally answered a question correctly.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Dez sits down, propping his elbows on his legs.
Would the king know where the body went?
The king knows all.
Does he know?
The bargainer raises his eyebrows. The fairy should be worried. Dez only uses that voice right before he kicks the hornet's nest. The scythe lifts from the fairy's finger and circles the man. Dez stands.
Let me amend my terms. Find me someone who can tell me who did this, and I'll let you live.
Chapter 11. I stare at the crevice in the ground.
This is where your king lives? I say skeptically. Just another hole in the earth.
You'll see,
Des's prisoner says ominously. Since directing us here, a flight that covered miles of arid, lifeless territory, this fairy has gained a lot more confidence. We're probably about to get shanked. I shift my weight from foot to foot. So what, are we just supposed to wait around? My words die off as someone blows a horn. Just as my eyes scour the landscape for the fairy, the sound of dozens of footfalls echo from the hole. Not a minute later, armed fairies come pouring out of the opening, pointing their weapons at us and shouting orders.
Hands at your backs! Hands at your backs!
Des does as instructed, looking ever the compliant captive. Taking a cue from him, I move my own hands to my back. The fairies clamor in close to us, all while ignoring our former prisoner. Not that I'm that surprised. His clothes are tattered and homespun, and he looks like he's been on the wrong end of one too many fists, which is about how these soldiers look. Des and I, however, are clothed in fine silks, and we're relatively clean.
Found these two wandering around the plains,
Des's former captive says.
King Henbane will want to see them. They've got magic in spades.
The soldiers grunt, eyeing us appreciatively.
You'll get your finder's fee.
I look forward to it.
I narrow my eyes at our former prisoner. He gives me a toothy smile and a two-fingered salute.
Enjoy your stay,
he says, backing away. The fairy leaves us there, descending into the crevice until the earth swallows him completely. The soldiers move to shackle us, their metal restraints clanging together. The sound fills me with no little amount of dread. For a split second, I'm vividly back in Carnon's prison.
Cuff her with iron, and you'll lose your balls,
Des says, pulling me back into the present. One of the soldiers hesitates, then squints at Des, a mean look in his eye.
Is that a threat?
Nah, he's just reciting poetry to you, I say. The fairy's glare moves from the bargainer to me, his lips pressed together like he's tasted something bad. All at once, he swings the back of his palm at me. He never lands the blow. His hand freezes inches from my face.
Hasn't anyone told you it's impolite to hit a girl?
The bargainer's voice is beguiling, and at his back, his wings have appeared. They spread out menacingly. The display is so obviously a warning, but the soldiers close in on him anyway. In an instant, Des's magic lashes out, knocking the fairies to the ground. With another pulse of his power, the soldiers' weapons are yanked from them, the swords and cudgels turned on their owners. They lay pinned in place, held hostage by their weapons. The only one not held up by their weapons is the soldier who tried to hit me. He lays on the ground, his eyes wide as his arm rises in front of him. As he watches, his fingers begin to curl into a fist. He stammers out,
"Well, what in all the..."
His fist strikes out, slamming into his face with a meaty slap. It pulls away, only to land a second blow, then a third, fourth, fifth. The soldier cries out as blood begins to drip from his nose.
"Hey, you fools!"
one of the fallen soldiers says. He's staring at Des's wings.
"That's the Night King!"
The bargainer's eyes sweep over them.
"I'm done playing games."
His voice drips with menace.
"Take us to your king."
The Banished Lands actually has a society. You can almost call it a civilization, except civil has no business being in the name. Since descending into the other world's butt crack, aka the crevice in the ground, I've gotten a quick and thorough introduction into Maltira, the city of the banished. So far, I've seen 6 fights break out, 4 passed out fairies, 3 couples going at it, 7 if you count the very questionable dancing we walked by, and dozens of people wearing jewelry made from fey bones. Apparently, bone necklaces are a thing. Early on, a few fairies catcalled me and another grabbed his crotch. That all came to a fun little end when the catcallers mysteriously started confessing to having grandma fetishes and venereal diseases, and the crotch grabber began squeezing his bits until he was begging for mercy. The entire time, Des's face remained pleasantly passive, but through our bond, I could feel the cool breath of his magic stirred to agitation. Don't piss off my boyfriend, yo. When he catches me staring, he drops the facade to flash me a devilish little smile. Then the facade is back up, and he's the cool but implacable bargainer once more. Around us, our guards walk stiffly, their spears and knives out, and their expressions menacing. None of them, however, get too close to me or Des, lest they tempt the Night King's anger again. I glance at the cavern ceiling high above me. All those stories about fairies living under the hill were true after all. Our armed escorts lead us past buildings that rise from the earth into the air, looking as though they've been formed from a single lump of clay. We pass rows and rows of these buildings, each one occupied by cagey fairies who've carved out some life for themselves. Just like the land above, the air here is parched of magic. But it's not just magic that's missing from this place. I've come to expect a certain fey elegance with the other world, yet most of the buildings are devoid of decoration. No one's attempted to carve designs on lintels or paint on adornments. Just as noticeable as the lack of aesthetics is the careless disrepair of the place. There are bits of litter here and graffiti there. The building across the way is stained and partially collapsed. The one next to it has been crudely patched up with mud and hide. It's all so very un-fey-like. We leave this city center through a corridor cut into the rock. Already we've descended hundreds of feet, but judging by the passage's downward slope, we're about to head even deeper into the ground. I glance at the wall sconces where flames flicker. The scent wafting from them closes up my windpipes. It smells like burning hair and rotting flesh, and I'm seriously concerned that's what the odd candles are made from. After a dizzying number of switchbacks and a few flights of stairs, our group comes upon two armed fairies who block the passageway. One of them is a fauna fae, his soft fox's ears poking from between his red hair. The other could be from any of the other kingdoms, his hair a bright blonde and his eyes the color of moss. Both wear the same patchy, homemade uniforms.
The King of the Night and his mate request an audience with the king,
one of our escorts now says to the fae standing guard. The one with the fox ears grunts, taking a nice long perusal of me, his gaze lingering on my tits, hips, and legs, because apparently every criminal here has to act like a fucking cliché. His attention moves to Des, and his lip curls.
If the king can't drain them, he doesn't want to see them.
For a beat, nothing happens. But then Des's magic rips across the room, throwing the banished fairies against the dank earthen walls. Not going to lie, it's been a real rough day for this group. The Night King's power pins them there, and it's so obvious that if we so wanted to, we could waltz right in to see this king and none of his lackeys could stop us.
You have to forgive your fellow soldier, Des says, stepping up to Fox Ears. He didn't word our demands correctly. This isn't a request, it's an order. But go ahead, defy it. I do so love to hear fairies scream.
He touches Fox Ear's cheek. The fairy shakes his head back and forth, whimpering as though he can feel the first tendrils of pain. Des assesses him for a moment, then with a flick of his wrist, he releases all the men. They crumple to the floor, rubbing their formerly pinned limbs. The fairy's posturing appears to be over, but before any of them can pick themselves up, Des looms over Fox Ears.
Oh, and a word of warning. Look at my mate again with anything other than respect and benevolence, and you'll lose your eyes.
Damn. Fox Ears bows his head, his ears drooping, his posture turning submissive. He nods, and with that, he and the other guards step aside and let our entourage pass by.
Got to threaten every damn grain of sand in this place.
Des mutters under his breath.
I can't help but agree with him.
The only thing anyone seems to respect around here is power. We pass three more sets of guards, two of which also need to be threatened, and descend deeper into the mountain before we finally arrive at a massive stone door. This far beneath the earth, where the sky is only a distant memory, I can feel the barest breath of magic. So the banished lands haven't been reaped of all power, just the vast, vast majority of it. And now I understand why the citizens of the banished lands built down. Because the lower you go, the closer to magic you get. And in a world where everyone's suffocating in its absence, even the barest hint of it is precious. The stone door is pushed open, and I get my first good look at the king's inner sanctum. The vaulted room is packed to the brim with fairies in loincloths and bandeaus, leather pants and body paint. It's all so primal and oddly, savagely, sensual. The fairies pin us in from all sides, making our trip down the aisle slow and claustrophobic. I take in the hordes of them, their exotic faces ranging from curious to bloodthirsty. Beyond them, I catch sight of the top of the makeshift throne, carved from rock and fitted with bone and steel. But it's not until we're nearly at the end of the aisle that the crowd parts, and I finally see him. The king. He lounges on the stone throne, his legs splayed out. In place of a shirt, he wears dozens of bleached bone necklaces, each one strung with a dizzying number of teeth and bones. His brown leather trousers hang low on his tan hips, and strapped to them are several blades, some made from stone, others steel. His chestnut hair is plaited back from his face, and it hangs in ropes over his shoulders. A crown made out of metal and bone perches high on his head. The thing is fashioned crudely, and I'm surprised that a fae would wear such a thing. It looks like something I made in art class when I was 5. His glittering green eyes fall first on Des before skipping over to me. Here they take their time, moving from my face to my chest, hips, and legs. Then they make a slow climb back up. As he assesses me, his fingers tap against an armrest. I would have said he was bored, except there's far too much interest sparking in his eyes. The fairies in front of us stop and kneel.
Your Majesty,
they murmur.
I see we have visitors.
The king says this like Des and I are offending his sensibilities. His sensibilities. The man sitting in the "I was drunk when I made this" chair. The kneeling fairies now stand, turning to us.
Bow before His Eminence, Lord of the Banished, Master of the Forgotten, Protector of the Maligned, King Typhus Henbane.
One of our escorts commands, though he looks a little ill while he says it. The bargainer saunters forward a few steps.
You have titles? How charming.
King Henbane stands, his chestnut hair gleaming under the torchlight and his necklaces rustling.
Forced your way into my presence without even a bow to show for it. Can't say I'm surprised at your impetuousness, Desmond Flynn.
So he knows who Des is. I also notice that he dropped my mate's title. Definitely a snub there, and today is really not the day. The bargainer seems particularly prickly. Typhus's gaze slides to me, and again he assesses me. This time, however, there's more than a touch of scorn in them.
But for your slave lover to not show me respect.
He clicks his tongue. Last time I endured such a grave insult, I impaled the fairy for it. Down our bond, I feel a flash of white-hot anger, but looking at Des, you would never know it. The King of Night gives Typhus a mocking smile.
Last time I saw a jester pretending to be a king, I actually laughed.
Ooh, burn.
The room goes deathly silent. Welp, that got their attention. This king's wings flicker behind his back, and his face ticks.
If you came here to curry my favor, O great king, then you might want to start over.
You are an exiled criminal still serving out your sentence. In what world would I seek out your favor?
Tephys laughs in the face of that, the crowd echoing the sentiment. When the room quiets down, he says,
Do you know how I came to be?
The king sits back down on his throne.
I was already strong before I was ever sent here some 150 years ago, and I have since imbibed countless men's magic.
Even a day here has left me with what feels like a mild hangover. I can't imagine years, decades, centuries of this. Tephys must be powerful, to live here for this long and still have so much magic.
Thousands have gifted me their powers, he continues, all in return for my protection, protection which you are now threatening.
Des raises his eyebrows.
Is that right?
We're not in your kingdom anymore, we're in mine.
He doesn't say it, but he's implying that Des and I are bound by loi du royaume, that we must submit to Typhus's rule and the laws of his land. The bargainer's eyes sweep over the room.
So this is your kingdom now?
A surprised little chuckle escapes him. King Hanbane tightens his grip on his armrests.
Forgive me,
Des says.
But this is the first I've heard of anyone wanting this shithole.
Hanbane rises to his feet again, his face flushing with anger. At his back, angular, iridescent wings begin to form. Aw, did my boyfriend piss someone off? The king motions to someone in the crowd, and in response, a fairy steps away from the gathered masses, a pair of thick iron shackles in his gloved hands. Several of the soldiers in our entourage now hesitantly grab Des. They might not want to get in another skirmish with the King of Night, but they also don't want to betray their loyalties. They move my mate's hands in front of him, and Des just lets them. I make a move to intercede, but two of our escorts cut me off, holding me in place. The King of the Night flashes me a look, and unlike all his playful words, the expression is serious, though I'm not sure what unspoken message he's trying to beam at me. The fairy with the iron manacles steps up to the bargainer. I don't care that Des is powerful and unyielding as the fairy moves them to his wrists. I struggle at the sight of them. During my time as Carnon's prisoner, I saw exactly what iron did to the Fey. With an ominous clink, the soldier cuffs Des. They're only on his wrists for an instant before the iron shackles slide uselessly off, landing on the dirt floor in front of Des. The bargainer raises his eyebrows.
That was not supposed to happen, I take it?
He asks. Up on the throne, the king fists one of his hands, but otherwise continues to watch impassively. Frowning, the fairy picks up the iron manacles with a gloved hand and again tries to cuff Des. And again, the shackles slip off him, falling once more to the ground. This time, when the guard stoops to grab them, the bargainer kicks them away.
Whoops.
Typhus settles into his seat, his sharp green eyes flicking over me.
Since our lord king won't cooperate, put a pair on the bitch he's with.
In response, the room gets a hint darker. Once more, the fairy bends down and picks up the shackles. Only as soon as he touches them, the cuffs clamp themselves on his wrist. His gloves slide off, exposing his bare skin to the iron. It only takes a few seconds for his screams to start up. And that right there is proof that this whole kingdom is nothing but fool's gold. I was imprisoned next to enough real soldiers to know that no matter how badly iron burned them, they wouldn't give their captors the benefit of their screams. Badassery at its finest. That was how hardened those soldiers were. These fairies are nothing but boys and girls role-playing at being soldiers. Des takes several steps forward, his magic thickening in the air.
You really shouldn't have said that.
That's all the warning he gives. In the next instant, power explodes out of him, tearing through the room. It blasts back the crowd of fairies, knocking them down like bowling pins. Even Typhus is thrown back against his seat, the stone trembling under the force of Dez's magic. The king looks utterly shell-shocked for a moment, and I can't decide whether he's blown away by Dez's power or his audacity. When he recovers, magic begins to form in his fist, bending the light as it takes the shape of a spear. He throws the bolt like a javelin, aiming straight for Dez. The bargainer doesn't move, though he has time to sidestep the throw. Instead, he takes the full brunt of it as it slams into his chest. He grunts at the impact, then touches his chest with mild interest.
I am impressed. How many of your subjects have you drained to amass this sort of power? Hundreds? Thousands? You must be co-bound to damn near everyone to wield this level of magic.
Another spear begins to form in Typhus's hand.
They've bequeathed their power willingly.
Uh-huh, and cake has no calories.
So I could defend them from men like you.
Dez waves a hand, and King Henbane is thrown back in his seat, his magic disintegrating in an instant.
Enough!
The King of the Night says it with such finality that the room full of hardened criminals now stills. Dez steps forward.
I was told you could give me answers, and I will have them, one way or another.
Typhus grimaces in his seat, his body slightly contorted. It takes a moment for me to realize that's because the bargainer's magic has him pinned in place. Around us, the fairies crowding the room seem to be held back by invisible hands. For the first time since exiting Galagar Nyx's tomb, the air is thick with power. It slips over my arms and curls around my ankles, caressing my skin. But unlike the magic in Galagar's tomb, Dez's power is familiar and inviting. It drapes itself over me like a shawl. Dez closes in on the dais, each careful step echoing across the quiet room. He struck us all dumb.
There's a grave in the southwestern territory of the Banished Lands, he says, his gaze trained on Typhus. It's marked by several large boulders. The body inside it was impervious to damage, and now it's missing. I want to know how that came to be.
Typhus narrows his eyes, a calculative gleam in them.
I have no idea what you're talking about,
he says, his words ringing false. I fibbed better when I was in diapers.
But even if I did,
he continues,
why should I tell you? You don't recognize my rule.
Dez studies the fairy, his head cocked to the side. My body tenses, expecting some reaction with a good dose of panache. But that's not what I get. Dez's expression becomes almost contemplative. He nods, like Typhus didn't just feed him a load of horseshit. Around the room, the bargainer's magic lifts and the air tastes parched once more. Cautiously, fairies begin to get to their feet. Typhus doesn't move, instead pretending that he deliberately chose to sit like a folded-up pretzel.
There is one other matter I must attend to before we head back to my kingdom,
the bargainer says, waiting until he's sure he has the room's undivided attention.
You know as well as I do that I can't leave here with you as you are,
Dez says.
So either you give them,
he jerks his head to the desperate hordes that bracket us in,
back their magic, or I'll do it for you.
I'm thinking that I'll do it for you involves sharp weapons and a dead body. Typhus rises from his throne, his face darkening and his hands trembling with his rising anger. The scent of the banished king's borrowed magic saturates the air. It smells just how you'd imagine it would, like that time you idiotically sampled too many perfumes on yourself and now all those strong, potent smells are clashing and giving you a mother of a headache.
Kill him where he stands!
It's an open order, and I'm pretty sure this idiot expects all of the fairies in this room to answer to it.
No.
I feel
feel the power of that one word ripple through the enclosed space. But it's not Dez who says it. I step away from the bargainer, my skin illuminating. I've had enough of this place, where the air itself feels like it's trying to squeeze your magic out of you. And I've had enough of this man, who for all his years of life has learned nothing except how to be a brutish a-hole. In response to my magic, the crowd around us begins to press in, none so close as our guards. As soon as their eyes fall on me, they forget they are self-respecting fairies who have duties. They move towards me, ready to touch my skin, stroke my hair, drink me up, and consume me whole. It's the way it always has been. Only here in this magicless place, my glamour is all the more alluring. Get out of my way, I order, my power filling my voice. The fairies do as I say, albeit a little reluctantly.
What are you fools doing?
This king shouts at them, despite the fact that he can't rip his gaze off of me.
Shut up,
I order. His mouth clicks closed, the sheer outrage on his face. I savor every last drop of it.
No one move, except to breathe,
I order, my voice echoing in the cavern.
Oh, and Dez, ignore my commands. You can do whatever you want.
Around us, the room seems to freeze in place. If I didn't know better, I'd say I was in a hall of statues. The bargainer folds his arms and leans against the nearest frozen fairy, using him like he would a wall. Dez has a good deal of mirth in his eyes, and it's clear he's eager to let me steal the show. I begin to walk down the aisle, towards Typhus's throne, my hips swaying. I head up to the dais, Typhus's gaze pinned in place.
You can move your eyes, I allow.
Immediately they snap to me. It's hard to read his emotions, since the rest of him is still frozen in place, but I definitely say that I'm getting some strong anger vibes coming from him.
I really shouldn't let you do this,
Dez says behind me. He sounds gleeful. I reach Typhus's throne, and God, his chair is even uglier up close. His crudely made crown rests right there, within reach, and I just can't help myself. I reach out and lift the thing off of his head, then settle it onto mine.
Look at that, I breathe. The slave you wanted to shackle is now your queen.
Now I can see Typhus's anger bubbling in his eyes. Still, he's powerless. On a whim, I command him, stand, Typhus. Robotically, he rises from his chair.
Now, O great king, bow before me.
Typhus dips low, his nose nearly touching his knees as he's forced to follow my command. As a PI, I've seen my fair share of pissed-off looks when someone is caught in the web of my glamour. King Henbane is no exception. He stares at me like he's cursing my very existence with his eyes. I lap it up like a cat does cream.
Sit.
He sits. He won't recover from this. Not now that his subjects have seen how easily I took his crown and bent his will. I tilt my head at the sight of him, sullen and powerless. There is just something about a felled man that gets to me in the most twisted way. Giving in to my baser nature, I move forward, climbing onto the king's lap, straddling his thighs. I feel just the thinnest thread of jealousy through my connection. That, too, I lap up. I am something to envy. Lifting a hand, I reach for one of his necklaces, enjoying the sick way the bones and teeth shiver as they brush each other. My gaze flicks to him, and Typhus's green eyes seem to darken. There's still plenty of anger in them, but now there's lust there, too. I smile. Someone probably wants to hate-bang me. Wouldn't be the first time. I readjust myself on his lap, shaking my hair out. Why did I think glamoring him was important? Oh, right.
You will answer all my questions fully and honestly, I command. Now, how long ago was the tomb opened? I ask.
His upper lip twitches in distaste.
A few weeks ago.
Recent. Part of me had assumed the tomb was opened years ago.
I glance over my shoulder at Dez, a self-satisfied smirk on my face.
He stares back at me, and his expression is amused, but his eyes are stormy.
Swiveling forward again, I lean into this idiot king, petting his cheek. In response, the room dims a little. Apparently, my mate has some objections to me petting other men.
And who opened the tomb? I breathe.
I don't know.
He growls.
What do you mean you don't know?
I mean it wasn't a who at all.
Losing patience. Explain, I command.
Again he hesitates.
How precious, as if he can fight the hold I have on him. After 2 short seconds, he gives up.
On the night the dead man rose, the night Gallagher rose,
he clarifies, making it clear that he knows exactly who lay buried in that grave.
It was a shadow that retrieved him.
Chapter 12. I don't think I breathe. Around me, the room darkens.
A shadow, I repeat.
Back to this insidious shadow.
I'd almost forgotten about this aspect of the Thief of Souls. The Night Kingdom's wet nurses had seen a shadow watching over the casket children, and in the Flora Kingdom, I had heard about a shadow visiting the sleeping women. I glance over my shoulder at Dez, the two of us sharing a look.
What did the shadow look like? I ask, facing Typhus once more.
My voice lilts as the glamour drips off my tongue. Typhus glares at me, his fury still apparent.
It looked like a shadow. I don't know, I wasn't there. This is just what was reported to me. Goddamn idiot slave.
This last part he says under his breath.
Just loud enough for me to hear.
The room darkens anyway. I don't need to look behind me to know Dez is all but primed for an attack. I don't let him get the chance. I click my tongue and grab Typhus's chin, squeezing his jaw the way annoying relatives love to squeeze kids' faces. I lower my voice to match his.
This idiot slave has your willpower by the balls. Now apologize to me.
I'm sorry.
It's the least sincere apology I've ever heard. I shift my weight, the reaction pulling a groan from him. Definitely in hate-bang territory with this one.
What are you sorry for?
He glowers at me.
Absolutely nothing, you cocksucking whore.
My claws sharpen and my back pricks where my wings want to manifest. Why do men like this always revert to the insults? It's embarrassingly predictable.
He'll pay for that, I say quietly. After you give me what I want, you'll pay for that.
I lean into his ear.
Perhaps I will make you suck someone's cock.
Over my dead body, would I make someone do that? But a little empty threatening does wonders for cooperation. I pull back.
I could, you know, I say, my voice low like a lover's. I could make you get down on your knees for every single man in this room, and you'd be powerless to stop me.
Typhus's borrowed magic seeps into the air around us, the most obvious indicator that behind his frozen exterior is a firestorm of anger. Someone is really unused to being at the bottom of a power dynamic. I pat his cheek patronizingly.
Now be a good boy and let's cooperate for a change.
My hand drops to one of his necklaces and I finger a small bone.
You said that the shadow retrieved Gallagher. What was Gallagher doing while this was happening?
Walking.
He says this so derisively, like there is no other way a previously dead body could leave a tomb. After a brief pause, he adds,
My report said he walked out of the tomb alongside a shadow.
So Galagar lay undying in his tomb until one night a shadow came and presumably awakened him.
Then the two skipped off into the night, and the rest of us were none the wiser.
Good, I say absently, patting his cheek once more.
Good.
I begin to climb off of Typhus's lap, my thoughts racing ahead to sleeping bodies and shadows when I pause. Oh, I almost forgot. There was one more thing. I sit back down on the king's lap, cocking my head to the side. He doesn't know it yet, but this is how a bird sizes up a particularly juicy worm.
How is it you are so strong? I ask, my skin still glowing, my voice still harmonizing.
I'm burning through magic like I'm a sorority girl throwing back tequila in Cabo.
I've already told you,
he says between gritted teeth.
I am co-bound to my subjects.
How does one co-bind themselves to another?
I glance over at Dez, who's beginning to pose frozen fairies like their Christmas reindeer, each position a little more compromising than the last. I face forward again, just as Typhus replies,
Say a short oath, exchange a little bodily fluid, and briefly embrace. That's all it takes.
All it takes for fairies to what? Give you their power?
If that's the oath they've sworn.
And all these fairies just happily give you their magic?
It's hard even voicing such a ridiculous question. They don't just give me it.
It sounds like I've come close to ruffling this king's feathers. Poor little Typhus, getting accused is just the worst.
That's right, I say slowly. You offer them protection in return, and I'm guessing a place to stay in your underground city. How magnanimous of you.
The air thickens with Typhus's magic. Definitely hit on a sore spot. His eyes no longer look just angry. They seem wild with panic. Right now, he can only answer my questions, and I'm curious to see what's going on behind those eyes.
What is it, Typhus?
Fairies die out here all the time.
And I bet you have nothing to do with that.
Again, he looks desperate to explain himself. Too bad we're not playing this game by his rules. We're playing it by mine.
Do you or the fae who work for you have anything to do with the deaths of the fairies who die out here all the time? I ask, throwing his words back at him. Again, that panic is in his eyes.
You made your shitty-ass bed, buddy. Now you have to lie in it. Typhus holds out, responding for a whopping 3 seconds.
Sometimes,
he finally hisses out. We're not talking loudly, but his words still echo throughout the room. I swear the silence somehow just got claws and teeth to it. I lean a little closer and drop my voice.
Remember when I told you you'd pay for your words?
He glares at me. The fucker remembers. I swivel around.
Every fae in this room can now move their necks.
As soon as the words are spoken, the crowd of fairies focus their attention on us. I rotate to Typhus once more. He still can't move, but he's beginning to sweat, little beads of perspiration giving his skin a sheen.
He knows what's coming. How delightful. I do savor how they squirm in the end.
I step off of him and face the room, raising my voice so everyone can hear.
You, Typhus Henbane, are going to confess to this entire room every single thing you don't want them to hear, starting with your true intentions for taking their power,
I order. His face is turning red, and he's grinding his teeth together in a hopeless attempt to stop the inevitable.
I...
Typhus tries to stall until the confession is yanked from his lips.
I spent the last century and a half coming up with ways to manipulate fairies out of their powers using whatever means I could think of. I did this so that I